In every age, God raises people up to speak the truth to the world in a way that is currently relevant. Though our opinions should not be held with the same esteem as the biblical canon, we still carry the hope of Christ to the world. Our society has forgotten what it means to follow Christ. The bright lights of truth seekers are barely visible in the dim twilight of a post-Judeo-Christian society. We all see the darkness coming. All we can hope is to share the light that He has entrusted to us. This is Modern Apocrypha. I'm Jared.
And I'm Greg.
And we're doing Modern Apocrypha.
Welcome, everybody.
Oh, I'm finally in a studio where the ventilation is done here. I'm happy about it. I'm finally at a point where I could record audiobooks if I want to. That feels good.
Right on. It's always great to see the progress just be done, right? It's such a big deal. To cross something off your checklist and no longer be stuck there.
Well, I still do have a few little things to finish up, but it's at least fully functional, which is finally fully functional. Been working on it for way too long.
Indeed. Talking about changes coming up, and we hadn't discussed this before we started recording, but we're coming up on, I don't know, episode 49 or 50, something like that, which is coming up on the end of what we would kind of think of as like a season one.
It's our first year, right? We've been recording for about a year, so coming up on the end of, we'll call it a first season, we may see some changes. You know, we may have some improved this or that. We may change the appearance of things a little bit, try to improve things, maybe even start doing some live stuff. We haven't really talked about that, but that'd be fun to do.
Great. Anybody listening, if you guys have suggestions or preferences, things that are better for you, I mean, we're here to talk, but that doesn't mean that we can't put it together in a way that's easy to hear. So,
absolutely. Well, and we'd love to talk about whatever people are interested in hearing about too. So, you know, shoot us a message somewhere. Absolutely. Go ahead and get a hold of me on Twitter. Email me Jared@e6universe.com. I think Greg, you have one at e6universe. Greg@e6universe.com. You can get either of us there. I'm Modern Apocrypha on Twitter, either any of that. If there's something you'd like to hear us talk about, we'd love to talk about it. Or, you know, if you're interested in coming on and talking about something, get a hold of me. Maybe we can make that happen too. That'd be fun.
That would be fun. It's always great to talk to people.
So for today.
Yeah, today's topic I wanted to bring up, this is something I'm kind of a stolen topic. It was an off-the-cuff comment that's one biblical man speaking to another and kind of just said in passing as I watch the YouTube shows that I watch, was that we have sort of this understanding as Christians about flowery speech, pretty speech, as opposed to good quality speech that provides a good outcome. And so we have a misunderstanding, it seems like, about not cursing, right? This cursing language seems to be a misunderstanding for Christians. The two big ones are that you always pull up, even if you just look up foul language in the Bible, it'll pull up James 5:12.
You said you wanted to start on Ephesians.
And Ephesians 5:4. Yeah. So James 5:12, Ephesians 5:4. Ephesians 5:4 is a fine place to start. Let's go with that. I'll just read it real quick. Mm-hmm. Let no foul, polluting language, evil word, unwholesome, worthless talk ever come out of your mouth, but only such speech as is good, beneficial to the spiritual progress of others, as fitting to the need of the occasion, that it may be a blessing. So, to give people like an example how you would see this in real world action, and I suppose we should put a pin in this, children listening, cover the children's ears, because this is on purpose, but not for kids' ears. I mean, this maybe is a Christian failing that we do this, but it is what it is. So,
well, there's a cultural thing there, and I wanted to talk about that when we got into it, because, you know, there is the bit about not putting a stumbling block in front of a brother, but go on, let's do this the right way.
The two examples that I'm thinking of that are, you could say it, using cursing language but being the nice thing to say. You could say, that bastard is the coolest MF-er I've ever met. You should go see his stuff. All positive.
Sure.
You just curse him. Or you could be a terrible old ninny that's saying, you know, he may be just the best.
How about this one? I got one for you.
Best one for this.
I got one for you. The entire world would be better off if you were dead. You have no value as a human being.
No cursing, but purely cutting someone down.
Right. Right, exactly. Exactly. Totally.
So the two examples being that you could curse positively and you could not use a curse word and be cursing somebody. Right. The idea that this is expressing is polluting language and unwholesome, worthless talk. Those are things that are degrading without positive benefit. And you could even be degrading with the purpose of stopping someone from doing bad things, right? The end result is the goal, and how you get there. I mean, it's not an ends versus means discussion exactly, but it is ignoring the actual words used, like the actual connection of letters is less relevant to the meaning of how you're putting it forward.
Exactly right. And this is actually something that has really bothered me for a long time, because there are a lot of Christian people I know who will say bad things about other people, but they get really offended if you use swear words. So they're, whether it's, and some of the most judgmental people I know are the ones who get the most offended about using swear words, where for me, you know, I can be, people get really self-conscious about swearing around me. And I'm like, dude, whatever, I'm a human being. I'm used to being around people. When my daughter swears, I try to tell her to make sure that she uses those words in proper context and with intent. I don't tell her not to use those words. I tell her to do it when it's intended and with intent. But
something to really note it here is the entire book, the entire corpus is, these are for you, my brother, so that you can do well in the world. Like, here's a tip for you. It's not that I'm going to come and beat you up if you don't, right? This idea that you are haughty in your language, that you won't let someone curse or put some combination of letters together, is missing the point.
Oh, it's absolutely missing the point. And I actually think that there's something pretentious about that whole thing that is more than just keeping your mouth clean. It isn't about that. As a Christian, what our attention should be on is lifting the people around us up. And so if, as you said, if we're using language that is considered foul language, but it's appropriate to the setting and the people around us aren't getting offended or upset about it, then that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And by the same token, if you're cutting someone down, if you're being judgmental, if you're talking about people behind their backs, and the whole thing is the whole swallowing gnats or swallowing camels and swatting at gnats thing that Jesus was talking about when he would criticize the Pharisees. He'd say, you're swallowing camels, you're swatting at gnats, meaning you're allowing things to happen that are terrible things, and then you're getting picky about the things that really don't matter. And isn't that a pretty common failing to man, you know? We ought to read the James one real quick too.
Yeah, and this one's a little bit different angle. This is from James. If you look at the passage or the book, this is rules for people in their homes. This is not right. This is how families treat each other. But James says, above all, my brothers and sisters, do not swear. Right? And this is where people pick up on the word. Not by heaven, not by earth, or by anything else. All you need to say is a simple yes or no. Otherwise, you will be condemned. So the idea being is that you say yes under the best knowledge that you have, but you've always got that, but more knowledge could come in to change my perspective on this. Like, as best I know, right? But you can't promise forever and ever. This is the way, right? Regardless, because that's going to mess up your household.
Well, and even more than that, you know, Jesus, I think it was Jesus said, don't, that you can't change the color of a hair on your head. How can you swear by it? You know, it's like, you don't say you're going to do this, say God willing, we'll make this happen, which is what we try to do, right? It's like, this is sort of maintaining humility in everything we do, where we do not assert that we have control over the thing. Instead, we assert that this is our intent, and God willing, that's what's going to happen, but without sort of being, without overestimating our own ability to impact reality. And that's sort of what this is getting at. And so, you know, another thing I'd like to bring in here is in the Ten Commandments, it's the third commandment is, you shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. And there's still a lot of Christians who sort of take the quote old-fashioned idea that you can't swear by God's name. You can't like say, oh, Jesus Christ, like when you're, you know what I'm saying, that or God damn or whatever. That's totally outside of what they're willing to listen to. And the reality is, what that's getting at is something way deeper. And I won't take a long time on this, but the idea is that when we do things, if we claim to do them under God's banner, under his name, under Jesus's name, under God's name, whatever, we're carrying his name as our banner, then we misuse that. That is a very serious offense, and we will not be held blameless for that. It is not about letting the name come out of our mouth badly. Not that we ought to be misusing his name in general. You know, it's like, as friends, I'm not going to misuse your name, and you're not going to misuse my name. We're not going to, that would sort of be a disrespectful, icky thing to do to each other. But what the commandment is speaking to is something much deeper. It's saying, do not say that I am doing this under God's authority when what you're doing is in vain, when it's something that has nothing to do with God. Be very careful what you attach his name to. And so when it comes down to it, the core of all this, and tell me if you think I'm wrong here, but the core of all of this is that when we use words, our first attention needs to be to the spirit of what we are doing, building the people around us up, bringing life into the world through the words that we speak rather than death. And then there is the cultural thing of, you know, if the people around you get offended when you're using profanity, probably don't do that unless you have a very specific reason, because you're going to offend people. It's not a good thing to be going around using profanity just to irritate people. But
yeah,
going
around being an intentional irritant is very popular. It's very enthralling to people. People really do find a lot of payback out of those actions. But man, it really does cut your legs out from under you whenever you become the boy who cried wolf, or the boy with a finger in the dripping wall, right? If you constantly made yourself someone not to listen to, when you do find something that's dreadfully important, who's going to care?
Well, and actually, you know, this is, we can bring ourselves into this here a little bit. When we do this show, Modern Apocrypha, we are not out to irritate people. I'm sure that there's a lot of what we say that sort of rubs people the wrong way, but we're not trying to push people's buttons, where that's how a lot of people make a name for themselves, is trying to push other people's buttons. And for us, it's just about talking about the things that matter. And actually, I would rather not irritate people unless there's a good reason to. Not that it bothers me to say things that irritate people. I mean, this whole subject is going to irritate a certain percentage of Christians. You know, I there are guys who I talk to on a weekly basis who actually take moral offense when people use profanity. And it's because this is sort of
what language? Their language or another language or
Right, exactly. Well, and this is sort of this is, but it's because it's been trained into him, right? It's like we get these sort of factory settings. When you live down in the Bible Belt, it is considered impolite and culturally inappropriate to use those words, and people will actually take offense. It's like, quote, the N-word, talking about black people or whatever. At this point, there are genuinely a large percentage of people who have a serious problem if you use that word in any context.
That's
unless
me.
You are black. Well, I don't.
Yeah, it's culturally ingrained in me. I can't hardly say it. I can't hardly listen to it. But the N-word is one programmed into me.
Well, and I don't have a problem with it specifically, but, you know, I am careful about not just saying things to piss people off. I don't actually want to do that. It's not becoming of a child of the Most High to intentionally go sticking a finger in people's eye. Now, proclaiming the truth and having that offend people is an entirely different ball of wax, right? Because what we're talking about there is we actually have an important message to deliver, and we have to say it in order to profess Jesus Christ, who is the truth. And so if it offends people, well, that is just par for the course, because we know that he said we would. Now, another thing I want to bring into this before the break, if you don't mind, is there is a place, I can't remember where it is, I could look it up if you want, where Jesus says that it is not what goes into your mouth that defiles you, it is what comes out of your mouth that defiles you. Jesus actually said it in one of the Gospels. And I don't think this is anything but just a reiteration of the points we've already been making, right? It's like saying, uplift the people around you, don't tear them down. And use language that is uplifting to people, not language that is destructive to people.
And I would go a step further. Like, okay. this adds one extra point to that, which is if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. So lift up your close ones and say nothing about others, and simply by where you give your energy, they will be lifted up. But if you ever push down someone else, you're a rent seeker, right? You're bad. You are creating an enemy. You're going to create problems in the future, right? All these additional things that come out of that because you badmouth somebody. It doesn't matter.
Well, I don't know that I disagree with you substantially, but I do have a slightly different sort of take on this. It isn't, I agree, if you don't have something loving to say, don't say anything at all. But there are times when the difference between nice and loving in our society is about a world of difference, and people need to hear something loving, but something nice is not going to do them any good. And so then we get to the question that's a hard one, actually, which is, when do we choose not to say anything at all versus when do we actually open our mouths? Because there have been a million times in my life where I have looked at a situation and I've gone, I know exactly what's wrong here. I know what needs to change, but I'm not going to say anything because what I would say would just end up causing heartache and destruction. And it isn't my job to fix them. If they need my opinion, they will actually ask for it.
And I think that the line for that is if they are yours, right? You know who your people are, right? It's a self-defined group. And if they're your people, you speak up. Otherwise, it's a learning experience for God to be training you on handle. And then from that, By lifting up your group, you will become a shining hill in the city so that other people aren't tyrannized into your style, your ways. They are voluntarily going to what's better. So it's always going to happen that way. You don't want to not offer good advice to people who are asking, right? They're asking, but
yeah,
you don't want to offer your opinions until they ask.
Right. Well, and then when it comes to things like where people are your people, this is actually where I get myself into trouble, because when people are my people, I make a point of pointing things out that I think are destructive in their lives because I love them. I try to do it out of love. I try not to pick on them all the time, but I do try to do it out of love. And this is how I chase a lot of people out of my life, where, you know, I a lot of times I've said, you know, this is not a good thing. You need to stop doing that. It's hurting you. And people just don't want anything to do with me anymore, because this is something that they have decided is a good part of their life, and they value it. And really, they're doing themselves harm. Well, that's okay. I love that person. I'm going to speak up. They don't have to listen. They don't have to agree, but it is incumbent on me to speak up. And that's the point that a lot of people don't seem to understand. Is actually, this might be a subject for the next episode. I don't know, but something a lot of people don't seem to understand is that the responsibility that we have is not to agree with people and not to say things that are agreeable to people, but to be truthful as best we can, and then not push people away when they don't agree with what we say. So there have been plenty of times where you and I have disagreed about things, and that's fine. It's a disagreement. It sits better between us for me to speak up and say, I don't think this is good. And then you say, well, that's what I'm going to do. And I say, okay, I will still be your friend. And then it sits, and that's fine. And that's our responsibility, right? We each have to make the decisions about our lives. We have to consider the opinions of the people we care about. But we don't have a responsibility to do the things that people tell us that they think we ought to do. It's like there's this tyranny that people exert on each other because they're friends, where if you don't do what I say, you don't get to be my friend, right? Yeah, and that's just terrible. That's a terrible way to live. You know, worrying about what other people think all the time. But it's also terrible to not be able to speak up and say the things that you think are important to say. So the only remaining option is we speak up when we have something important to say, expecting that that people who love us will hear us, but not necessarily agree.
That takes a lot out of the speaker. I mean, it's, people will be brutal.
Gee, we got to be adults.
Well, there's a line between adult and suicidal whenever you come at these things. I don't think I would be comfortable going to my mom and trying to have her see today's world. I'm just not going to get there.
Well, I'm with you. There is, okay, how do I put this? When you and I talk about things, I expect exactly what I just said between the two of us, where if I've got something important to say, I say it. I don't expect you to agree, but I do expect that you'll hear me because you care what I think and that you'll think about it. And that's as far as it goes, and vice versa. If you've got something important to say, I want to hear it. I may not end up agreeing, but I want to hear it. These are the people who I hold close in my life. These are the people who I choose to share my life with. I can't choose my mom and dad. In my mom's case, it's a similar thing where I can't always say all the things, but, you know, I still love her and I try to be wise in what I do say so that I don't hurt her or cause her trouble. And that's an important skill to develop. But what I'm talking about is the people who we choose to surround ourselves with, that inner circle of people whose opinions we trust. This is what I expect out of them as adults.
How might you equate that for today's society where people don't seem to go outside? The meme is go outside, touch grass, because people aren't. So if you don't, what do you do with a circle that's not a circle?
You know, man, this is, if I could answer that question definitively, then I would have the answer that everybody in the world needs right now. And so the best I know is to try to help people to see the world the way I do, to try to bring them into my worldview and to give them the good things that I have as they want them. But, you know, how do you communicate all of the important things about life to the crazy people who live in this crazy world is what you just asked me, unless I'm misunderstanding.
Well, no, no. How do you equate a automotive analogy to a pedestrian populace, right? You've got people that aren't living in that circumstance, because I don't live in that circumstance. You may have a circle. I don't talk to 10 people. Like I could count the number of people I talk to on one hand, not even do. So.
Well, okay. So I don't know. I have always, see, I'm kind of odd this way. There's a part of me that is very social and I like to talk to people, but there's another part of me that dreads it and hates it and doesn't want to do it. So I get both sides of this. And for myself, I choose to keep people around me because I know up here how important it is to have people keeping me sane. And the people I choose to keep around me, who I choose to keep close, are the ones who I can do that with. And there aren't that many. It's maybe 10, man. It's not that many. Where with the wider circle of acquaintances, I tend to take a much lighter, I tend to have a much lighter touch on them, where I try to give input where it's helpful, but I don't like require them to go ahead.
Is there a spot in your mind, and we might need to pause this until after the break to get to a good end to this question, but is there a magic number? Is there a too many? Is there a too few? Would you go by the apostle number of 12 friends, 13 total? Well, would you think that you get spread too thin once you get too many? Would you think that you don't have enough avenues if you don't have enough? That it's a real question. Like, I don't have an answer. I
actually do have an answer. There's an interesting answer to this.
It's an interesting space.
You know, I wish I could remember the name of the concept that I'm thinking of. Maybe we should just, it's a little early, but we could take a break now. Let's take a break. We'll come back. I'll look this up and we can actually hit it in some depth.
Sounds good. All right, everyone, we'll be back here in a minute.
Sounds good. As you can probably tell from the backdrop, there are new things happening here. This is my new sound studio for recording audiobooks. It's not quite done, but it's done enough that I can record an ad in it, and that's exciting. I also have an anthology that I'm just finishing now. It should be coming out real soon. I have book 2 in the Bright Star series is basically finished, other than some professional edits and the publishing, and I'm pushing on that pretty hard. I'm hoping that there will be news on that one in the near future. When it comes to audiobooks, I'm planning on recording both the anthology and Bright Star. And folks, I need support and help now more than ever. Bright Star is doing just fine. I'm perfectly happy with it, and I am expanding both my ground game and my marketing game, and things are just growing. But the best recommendation is a recommendation from a friend. So if you like what you see on Modern Apocrypha, take this as a recommendation to you. Bright Star is worth your time. And if you've read it and you like it, recommend it to somebody. Help me out getting the word out about this series. And be on the lookout. More's coming soon. Energemetra6.com, e6universe.com, promo code Israel, 10% off.
Hello, Modern Apocrypha listeners. I'd like to take a moment to lift up North Arrow Coffee. If you're like me, you enjoy quite a bit of coffee, and North Arrow has a lot of really good coffees. But they're also following their very own North Star to support pro-life organizations. At North Arrow, 15% of all sales go towards life, not just for a limited time, but for a reason. So, if you'd like to support the podcast, you can use the code E6 at the North Arrow web store and save 10% today. Thank you.
And we're back.
Welcome back, everybody.
So I wanted to bring into this Dunbar's number. That was the concept I was thinking of. And for everybody who's listening, let me actually read this. Dunbar's number is a suggested cognitive limit to the number of people with whom one can maintain stable social relationships. Relationships in which an individual knows who each person is and how each person relates to every other person. Okay, so the concept here is that he thinks that there is a specific number of people that we can maintain stable relationships with. And I think the concept behind what he's talking about is valid, but the idea that there's a specific number might be a little off. So go ahead. You had a thought.
Well, the thought of that is that his numbers that I've heard as high as 300, as low as 150, yeah. Right? Yeah. In that space, nothing about that works today, because in the definition, those people are related to each other, and you're not related to my brother or anything about my life. My work boss lady that I had horrible problems with in the past didn't know you or my parents or my brother. Like, nobody knows anybody else. So that system of tribal grouping doesn't work the way it did then. Secondly, it doesn't really address whether or not there's 150 slots where 20 dudes just like you fit one slot for me, and they can all interact just fine. Those are my Jareds. I've got my 20 Jareds, and that's one slot. Or is that 20 of my people? Right. So there's a lot of figuring of that number that is interesting. Additionally, the overall number of, let's say, 150, out of those 150, your close friends, your confidants, is not the full group.
Okay, so you're right. But here's the whole thing behind it that occurred to me. And what I think motivated the observation is that there is a certain number of people that we can reasonably keep track of and keep up with in our lives. And that for a lot of people, that number is around the 150 to 300 mark. That beyond that, you start to lose track of people and you start to not be able to maintain those relationships properly. Okay. And I think that there is some value to that concept, that for each individual, we have a limit to the number of people we can keep up with and relate to. And that it isn't necessarily a bad thing to have people come into our lives and go out of our lives, and to have that group of people change somewhat. That I don't think is a bad thing. Now,
in that case, if you've got slots that can be swapped out, as it were, would you imagine that your Dunbar number is filled up by stories? Does Jesus take a spot? Does Nebuchadnezzar take a spot? Does Sherlock Holmes take a spot, right?
Well, Ben Shapiro does for a lot of people, or Donald Trump does for a lot
of people. Or Jay Leno, yeah.
Right, so I don't know whether... You know, the idea of stories is actually a good point, because really all we know about a lot of those celebrity figures is stories. We don't actually know those people. So, yes, actually, those people can take a slot in there. And, you know, I think the point that I would make here, though, is that everybody has different social capacities, right? So my dad is not a super social guy. He has a fairly limited number of people who he chooses to interact with regularly, and a somewhat larger number who he likes to keep up with. Usually it's mostly family. There are a couple of other people who are in there who have been friends with him for a long time. But then outside of that, it's all acquaintances, and he'll be friendly with them when he's with them. But he doesn't make a whole lot of effort to, you know, to remember, to keep up, to maintain connection, whatever. It isn't something he would drive an hour to do. It's just, you know, they're a matter of part of the scenery for him. And he recognizes that they're human beings and he treats them with respect, but he doesn't make an effort of bringing them into his life. So, you know, we humans like to separate things out. We like to categorize things. But really, the way it actually looks for most people is most people have a certain level of deep friendship that they can get other people, they can accept other people into. And it's usually a fairly small number. Usually it's five or so, somewhere in that number of deep, close friends that they would have.
It's an interesting space because you look at things like the most popular of all simmered down ethoses, right? And you get something like that 10 to 12, like the Sandlot is a baseball team, right?
Right.
You build a baseball team. That's kind of, it feels like five is low for the average human. Maybe our strange digital world has got that lowered for some reason, or maybe we're especially antisocial people.
Well, okay, so even within a group of 10 or 12 people who you have close relationships with, there are going to be those you're closer to than others. It's like on a baseball team or on any sports team, or I used to lead a raid group in World of Warcraft. Within that raid group, there were little cliques, and we only had 10 of us. So, you know, there were about a dozen people who kind of floated around there. But the point is, even within a dozen, you've got these little cliques where people are closer or further away. So I think that there's still, that the way I would describe it is still, it's more like a spectrum where you have people who are close, and then you get further and further as people, you know, as you go out. And this person might be here, this person might be there, then a whole bunch of people out here, whatever. Point is, yes, I think that there is a number of people who each of us is able to keep up with in a reasonable way. And beyond that, we don't do very well. And, you know, less than a certain percentage of that, and we get unhealthy. And I know that for a fact. So that number is going to vary from person to person. There's no question, right? It's like, I know people who need at least five close friends, because any fewer than that, and they would get sick of them, right? It's like the five close friends would get sick of that person because they're so social. But
right, and it occurs to me to look at this on a bit of a spectrum. If you had zero friends, that would be weird. You can't do that, right? Zero is the wrong number, right?
Zero is a bad number. We need personal connection as human beings. We have to have that close social tie in order to be sane.
So Greg, that's the one side of it. That's the one side of it. The other side is the Bill Maher, Donald Trump, I'm a celebrity and I'm not okay unless there are 1,000 people screaming my name. You don't.
Well, okay, so that's a different thing. Those are not
personal friends. That's the whole thing. I'm saying it's a different thing. Okay. They act like it's not a different. They act like it's the same thing, because what they're trying to extract from you is your attention without giving it up. Right. If you find yourself on the upper end of things where you cannot keep up with offering attention, remembering their stuff, whatever it may be, right? Just the tip for tap, the give and take, right? The give.
Yep.
If you have gotten yourself past the point where you no longer feel bad about not giving to somebody, right? Whatever it may be. That's my 900th. Like on my video, so I don't even care anymore, right? Whatever it may be, right? Once you've gotten past the point that you don't care anymore, then you're in a usury space.
Well, to some degree, that's true. But then you get, for example, you get people like the Apostle Paul, who had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people who his life touched, or any other Christian missionary, minister, person who's out across the world doing things. They have lots and lots of people their lives touch, but, and they genuinely do care about them, but you still have to understand that they're not using those people, but they still can't consider them all close friends. And that's where you have to have this other kind of relationship. And as an author, I think about this stuff sometimes, because hopefully over time there are going to be people who want to read my books, and they're not all going to be my close friends, but they do want to read my books, and that's great. And I want to share some of myself with them through those books, but that doesn't mean that I have time in a day to bring each one of them into my life and share everything about them. You know what I'm saying? I'm not wanting to use those people. I want to offer them some value, and hopefully they have some, you know, they can pay me $10 or whatever for the book, you know, whatever it is. But the point is, there's more to it than being a user. There are other kinds of relationships in there. There is what you're talking about, of course. There are guys like Bill Maher and Donald Trump who love to have the people screaming their name, and they do something fake to get it. And I don't have a whole lot of use for that. That's kind of crappy, obviously. But by the same token, there is a healthy way to approach that as well. And that is simply along these lines that, yes, I have something valuable to offer to people. I may not be able to be close friends with each one of them, but I do want to be able to give them whatever I have. And if I get an opportunity to talk to them, I want to share something valuable with them. I want them to be able to speak life to me, and I want to speak life to them. And maybe I'll never see them again until we get to heaven, or, you know, maybe not even then. I don't know. But there's still that value that changes hands, and it's a good interaction, right? That's the hope.
That's the hope, for sure. Well, and I think that there's something very strong in the concept of communing with Christ. You're offering something of aligned to Christ, a line of truth as you see it, and it wouldn't bend to the fan. The fan can appreciate it or not, but right. They're not in synthesis with it. They're consumers, right? And if you have someone that praises Jesus, and you say, well, if I praise Jesus, that's great, it's not the same thing as, man, you've fallen in a hole. Let me sacrifice my time to get you out. I don't know. It's a different thing.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
We are both appreciating, and we're not you and I, but you and the fan, or the writer and the fan, are both appreciating the truth that is being presented.
Right, and that's a good thing. Well, and hopefully, you know, as a writer, hopefully I have a way of giving people something that they wouldn't see in those terms, or giving it to them more clearly, or whatever. Hopefully that's what I'm doing, and hopefully that's what we're doing with this podcast. I mean, that'd be the goal, right? We get a certain number of listens every week, and hopefully each of you guys who's listening to this is getting something good out of it. But, you know, I don't know who each one of you is necessarily, and maybe we don't have time to share each other's lives in a deep friendship way, but at the same time, I don't mind sharing whatever I can to give value to the people around me. That's the whole goal of doing something like this.
Agreed. Yeah, this is partially that, and partially that I've been a Christian for ever. I was born into Christianity, and I haven't been very vocal about it throughout the vast majority of my life, and I have a feeling that that is detrimental in and of itself. I don't consider myself evangelical, because I don't know that I feel right about something like a manipulation, as opposed to here's a billboard of correct, you can follow it or not. But that doesn't take away from the fact that I haven't stood up and said, I've always been Christian. If I've been doing good, blame God, right?
Well, and I, you know, I don't put labels on myself. The beliefs I have would probably fit with a lot of people's conception of an evangelical Christian, but that doesn't mean that I accept that label, or, you know, that I use that label for myself either. And I know that's the case for you.
I have a big problem with sloganizing and labeling. It's something that you brought up in a previous episode about the Christian label being better at adoption in some way. And I was like, well, technically true, but the problem I see with the statement is that you just tell bad people what to say on the form to get what they want. And not that they are the actual thing they're saying, but you just tell bad people what to say by...
Right. You can't test the heart with a piece of paper.
Right. So the problem is not that I disagree with the statement, but the label creates an angle for bad people to use it.
Well, and that's the whole problem with, quote, Christian nationalism, too, in a lot of ways, is you cannot cause people to believe a particular way by making them profess something. That's not the way it works. If you want to profess something because you believe a certain way, that's a whole different can of worms. And it's a whole lot better for each individual involved if what we're doing is we're choosing to profess based on what we believe, not having to profess in order to accomplish a secular goal. And that's why I have a huge problem with that whole notion, because you're going to create a Christianity without Christ.
You mean Catholicism?
I didn't say it.
Oh, okay. We're just going to follow what some guy in a robe says and not what Christ tells us to do.
Dude, I don't know. I had a conversation on Twitter today with a guy who, somebody I'm following on Twitter says how she hates how people who she knows who are Catholic don't want the Protestants they know to say anything about what they believe. And I reply, yeah, but they're screaming about how Catholicism's better than Protestantism the whole time.
And there's a bit of competition. There's a bit of competition. Well, today's topic came from a podcast where there were a couple of Catholics talking, and they were getting beat up because of the idea that, you know, you could pay for sins to be taken away and all the things that history has done in history.
At the end of this conversation, I did the whole stick a finger in people's eye thing, and I don't know whether I should or not, but you know, it's like when somebody worships Ishtar, the queen of heaven, do you say you're worshiping Ishtar, the queen of heaven, or do you just let them go on their merry way worshiping Ishtar? Well, I have a lot of relatives who are Catholic. I love them dearly. They worship Ishtar. Stop doing that. That's bad. Don't do that.
Right. Well, and people don't bulk. They aren't surprised into action unless you call it pedophilia, unless you call it, you know, the thing that it really is by its original name. Right. Yeah. That's haram. They're like, what? We know that is holy wow. Right. So is it a poking an eye in it? I mean, sometimes there's a podcast out today by conservative people about sticking a finger in your eye at the beginning of every conversation to see who can take a joke, to see who's just a false player that can't handle reviewing what's actually happening for a logical conversation or a fellowship between two humans. They're just there to regurgitate, you know, some pre-existing line. And if you can't take a joke and you're just here to regurgitate lines, I got no time for you. You go do that against the wall, because that's about as useful as you are.
Well, so, I mean, that's a whole other question, though. You know, basically what you're getting into there is it's a test of, is someone so ideologically possessed by a particular set of ideas that when you challenge those ideas, they get offended, even in the slightest way? And that's the whole Catholic thing. You know, a lot of the people who I value are my relatives. Huh?
I was hearing Jewish there, too.
Oh, sure, sure.
Anti-Semitism. Oh, my goodness. Everything's
sure. Well, I mean, okay, so plenty of people fall into this category. But the point is, when you are so possessed by a set of ideas that someone questioning those ideas bothers you so much you want nothing to do with them, then that's a good way of gatekeeping your personal, the group of people you keep around you. And that's kind of what they're talking about, is when you're talking about sticking a finger in somebody's eye at the beginning of a conversation, you're talking about taking their sacred cows out and shooting them. It's like me talking about Ishtar worship. I'm sure that at some point a Catholic will listen to this and will get grouchy at me for saying that. But, you know, I believe that you have a right, whoever you are, to believe what you choose to believe, and you do not have a responsibility to agree with me. On the other hand, I really do hope that everybody who listens to this takes a serious look at what they believe to make sure that their faith is centered in Jesus Christ. And if that's the case, then he's going to take them away from, not toward, the idolatry of Ishtar worship, which is at the center of the Roman Catholic Church. It just is.
Is that the worship of the mother? What is that?
Ishtar?
Yeah.
Ishtar is one of the pagan gods that is in many of the pantheons, and Ishtar is known as the Queen of Heaven, known also Ashtaroth, also Inanna, has a lot of names down through history. It's the same spiritual being, the same actual person, spiritual person, who is a...
Are they putting the face of Mary on it? Is that how they're doing?
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
Okay.
They are. And the reality is, it, you know, I've, like I say, I've got a lot of relatives who are Catholic, and some of them actually have a relationship with Jesus Christ. Many of them do, and would still take offense at what I'm saying here. But the reality is that when you get deeper and deeper into those circles, you get more and more of this draw toward veneration of Mary, to the point where they call her sinless. And that's not,
what,
that's not a real thing. Well, it's not a real thing. And then, yeah, no, there are just a million things where you get into it and you go, no, you can't do this and still actually believe in the truth. And once you compromise your personal attachment to the truth, then you've got a really serious problem. So,
well, and we know where that,
I'll get off my soapbox.
Sure. We know where that goes in a longer term. We know that in the second period, temple period, that haughtiness had taken down Jerusalem itself, I believe. We know that the Catholic history shows many, many horrible acts that were in the name of God, right?
Right. So, well, where people carried the name of God in vain.
Well, technically true. But really,
exactly.
But if we're looking at the real world side effects, what happens as a cause of that, you could look at the downsides, right? The things that you would say you wish wouldn't have happened in Catholic history, right?
Yeah.
And those are those things. That there's your answer right there.
Well, we know Jesus said, you will know them by their fruit. And that goes to all of us. That goes to every one of us. There are lots of Christians who have lots of problems with lots of things, whether it's, you know, whether it's drinking or pornography or being judgmental or being absorbed in work, being a workaholic or whatever. There are more things to do wrong as a human being than we can even name, right? It's like they're just a huge number. So to say that a particular group of people has this particular thing that they're doing wrong, that doesn't really, I mean, so what? We all do things wrong. We all have problems. The key is just, are we centering ourselves on something that is keeping us away from Jesus? And if so, we need to stop it. And that goes for me, and that goes for anybody else. There have been a lot of things in my life that have taken that place. There was, once upon a time, I was completely addicted to video games. To the point where I remember thinking to myself, I never said it aloud, but I thought to myself, you know, if there aren't video games in heaven, I don't think I want to go to heaven. Which is a totally stupid thing to say. I was kind of a kid at the time, but sure, you get the idea. But I had made an idol out of that in my life. I had centered myself on that way too much. It was not healthy. It was not okay. And so, you know, that was something that had to change. And I think it pretty much has changed. You know, I still play video games for fun, but they don't consume me. They don't determine how I live. I don't center my life around them. They are the thing that actually kind of got me on this one, I can't remember who it was, but somebody who's listening to this is going to know. It was a known missionary's mom who said to him, he asked her, what's the definition of sin? And what is sin? How do I know what sin is? And she said, anything that refreshes you in your pursuit of Jesus and what he has you doing is not sin. Anything that sidetracks you from him and takes you away from what he has you doing is sin. And there was a time when my focus on video games was taking me away from Jesus. It was a sin. And that's not the case anymore. It's a thing that I use to occupy myself now and then to rest. And that's great. That's healthy. There have been many other things in my life where there have been bad things, and it's true of all of us. So the point is, and what I'm wanting to bring all of this back to real quick, is this idea that as Christians, what we need to do is we need to keep our eyes on the prize. The prize is Jesus. Anything that is getting in the way, we need to get it out of the way. If that's a religion, if that's a set of beliefs, if that's a church, if that's work, if that's games, if that's you name it, that thing needs to go because he's what matters. There may be those who convert to Catholicism for whom it is not a problem because their connection to Jesus is such that that's where he has them in order to minister to those who are in that system who need it. That could be the case. I don't know. But I know that it's like any other organized religion where if you take it too far, it can take you away from him and not toward him.
Yep, and I would say that it's the same thing, just saying it another way, that we're charged to walk with Christ. We're charged to take up the reins ourselves, to run things ourselves. And the problem in voting, the problem in Catholicism, the problem that we end up in is that we say that we've checked this box, we've done this thing, and so now our mind's not on that. That's taken care of. Someone else will tell me, will sound the alarm when something goes wrong, whatever it may be. You've now handed over the reins, you've handed over control of your body, yourself, to someone else.
Responsibility, whatever it is.
Right, to an authority, and we'll hit on this at a later date, but you're not pinning it on something that's reliable, because it won't be reliable forever.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right. So whenever you assume that things will be okay because you've outsourced that job to someone else or some institution or something else other than yourself and your following Christ, then you're going to end up in the wrong place.
Yeah, you are. No, I'm with you. Hey, we're getting close to the end here. Is there anything else you want to go into before we call it?
We've said it before, but the quote escapes me. Basically, that you're empowered to besmirch, to speak ill, to say what you would say about God and Jesus, but not about the Spirit, right?
I mean, there's truth in that. Those who say bad things about the Holy Spirit will not be forgiven. Those who say bad things about the Father and the Son will. That is in Scripture. But exactly what that means or how that lands is a bit of a deeper subject.
But in that search for the appropriate Spirit, right? So in searching for the appropriate Spirit, that will guide you in your search as to whether or not the curse word is a curse word for your particular moment in time and situation. Are you building something up? Are you tearing something down? Not which words are you using?
Yeah. Well, and I've agreed with that ever since I've been able to think it through. So 100%, man. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. It has been great, and we will catch you next time.
Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time.